Hi, this is Roz Bornstein, and today's date is July 10th, 2001, and I am meeting this morning with Alice Siegel to gather Alice's oral history for the Jewish Women's Archive Weaving Women's Words Project. And we are currently at Alice's home in Seattle. And Alice, do I have your permission to interview and tape you?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. Why don't we start with where and when you were born?
Well, I was born in Seattle, January 23rd, 1924. So I've been here a very, very long time.
And who are you named after?
I'm named after my father's father, who, and I've never quite gotten the story straight, but what I recall is that I was told that my father's father died when he was still in Russia, but trying to get out of the country to come to America. And that would have been, prior to World War I.
Let's see. And where did you grow up?
Well, it was the central area of Seattle, close to Cherry and Yesler, and I know we had different names for Kosher Canyon, and one of the houses I lived in, actually the one from the time when I was about 11 until I got married, and almost every home on that street on 26th Avenue had a Jewish family. There were very few non-Jews there.
Is that right?
Yes.
So, could you, for those outside of Seattle, could you give us some boundaries of, maybe starting with the home that you lived in after you were born, up until 11 when you moved?
Okay. Well, of course, I don't remember the home I was born in, and I know it was in the same general area,
okay.
But the first home that I remember, well, I guess I was a baby there, yeah, and lived there until I was about 6 years old, and that was a duplex that my grandfather had built, and we had the second level. It was a two-story, so we were the second level. So I do remember that, and the Jewish families close by, and then I say fortunately, when I turned six in January, the school year was divided into two semesters, and we were allowed to enter the second semester, unlike it is today where you can only enter in September or the beginning of the school year, whatever it is. And at that time, because I was so eager to start school, I could just hardly wait to learn how to read and write. And so fortunately, I was able to start school within a couple of weeks. And after that, I think that summer, our family moved into another small cottage, which was on 25th Avenue, very close to Horace Mann School, which is now closed. Well, they're using it for other purposes. But at one time, this school was called Walla Walla, and some of my mother's brothers went there. I don't think my mother did. And my mother came to this country when she was about 6 years old. But they were on a homestead for a while and then came to Seattle. And so we lived in that house, well, until I was 11. And then we moved to, my father and mother purchased a home on the corner of 26th Avenue and East Alder. So it was always in the Jewish area, but 26th Avenue in East Alder really was the Jewish. I mean, it was very, very Jewish. And we had kosher butcher shops on Cherry Street and on Yesler Way. And it was, you know, quite different from what it is today.
Do you remember what some of the landmarks were of that neighborhood?
Well, for me, there was a Tomatora was built, and which was actually, it was built even before we moved to 26. And the house we lived in prior to that move was almost kitty corner from the Tomatora. So that was a landmark. I guess my elementary school was a landmark. And then there was the park across the street from the elementary school, and then Garfield High School, which was the high school that I went to. The other landmarks would be, well, the Kosher Butcher Shop sort of stands out in my mind.
What was the name of that butcher shop?
Oh, gosh.
Was it White Kosher? Or was it Varon's?
I think Varon's was on Yesler Way, I think. It might have been White Kosher. Yeah, it might have been. And then there was a small synagogue a block away from us on 26th Avenue, and that was Rabbi Shapiro was the rabbi there. And then that congregation eventually merged with the Bikkur Cholim. So, and of course I remember, oh, the bakeries, Lippmann's Bakery, Brenner's Bakery, and where they were. And there was one other Jewish bakery. I don't know, I can't remember the name. And of course, the Bikkur Cholim and the Herzl, and then the many Sephardic synagogues that were in that general area. So those are all places that were landmarks for me.
I see. And so growing up, you had quite a mix of Jewish families in your area.
Right, yes.
Ashkenazic and Sephardic,
it Yeah, sounds like. Although most of the families were Ashkenazic, but there were, yeah. I can think of some of the families that were not. The Benvenisti family, and then there was a Levy family, and I'm sure there were others, but those are the, because I was about the same age as their children, so I remember.
I see. And were these, the Ashkenazic families, were they Orthodox families predominantly, or was it a mix of Reform, conservative?
You know, I don't think there were any Reform okay. in the Central area, at least
yeah.
none that I can remember.
Right.
And so it was mainly some Orthodox, I mean some sort of secular, mm-hmm. or not that observant, and the conservative, the Herzl had quite a few.
Let's see. What were your interactions with Jews and non-Jews at that time, as a young child in that neighborhood?
Well, I guess when we moved to 26, I think it was mainly with the Jewish young people my age. When we were still living on 25th Avenue, some Jewish families, there were actually many, there were much more non-Jewish. And so my playmates, when we were living there, were mainly non-Jewish, except for the boy next door, who was about a year or so younger than I was. He was an only child. So his parents would take me on, you know, to the beach. Their son had a companion, so we got along very well.
And he was a Jewish?
Oh, yeah, he was Jewish. Yeah.
How do you think Seattle has changed over time as a place where Jewish people live?
Well, I don't think we have any, you know, solid pockets, except in the Seward Park area, which does have, you know, really the Orthodox are congregated there. And some other pockets, but it's really so diverse. And of course now we belong to the Reform congregation, and while there are quite a few people living on Queen Anne that belong to Temple D. Herzl and I, And in fact, we've been taking about three women who are widows, and we're taking the services on Friday night. And but people are spread out. They're all over the place. Magnolia, Queen Anne, north of Seattle, and of course Mercer Island in the east side.
So as the community has grown, it's really branched out to different neighborhoods. And
yes, yeah, it really has.
Okay. As you were growing up in those homes,
mm-hmm.
Who lived in your household?
Well, my father and mother, and I had one older brother that was 3 years older than I, and one younger brother who was 3 years younger than I, so I was the middle child. So that was our household.
And what were your parents' names?
My mother is Rose, and my maiden name is Abrams, and my father was Samuel Lewis. And now my father came to this country prior to World War I. He already had an older brother living in Bellingham at the time. So although I don't have the story straight, I don't know whether he landed in Ellis Island and then came across Canada and then to Bellingham. Although I think I've seen his naturalization papers say that he entered through Linden, but it's not clear. It's just not, it was never quite clear. And my father didn't care to talk about the past.
Where was he from originally?
Oh, he was originally from Lithuania. And my mother was born in Russia. And her father had come to this country 3 years before he saved enough money to bring his wife and at that time two children. And my mother was the oldest of the two. And she was six. That was my Uncle Jack, so Jacob. And probably a year or so younger. And my grandfather worked at a Studebaker plant. He was a blacksmith by training and from Russia. And so he had skills that could be transferred to doing machinist sorts of work. And so he worked at the Studebaker for about 3 years, and then he read in the foreword about land, getting land for farming. If you stay on the, you know, farm, I don't remember how many years it was, that would be your land. So he applied for it, and so he did the homestead in Republic, Washington. And that's in the northeastern part of the state, and it's very close to Canada. And then he had, you know, brought his young family. And so my grandmother came across Canada on a train with her two little children. And I guess one of the stories that I remember, it stands out in my mind. My grandmother, just before she approached her destination where Grandpa was going to come and pick her up and take them all to the homestead, she took off her chattel and just threw it. She says, "I don't need this in America." Now, she was an observant woman. She certainly kept strictly kosher, and she went to the synagogue every, you know, Shabbos. And, but I would call her, she was a modern Orthodox. And I really admired that. So they lived on this land that my grandpa, well, he had built some kind of little house for them. He was very good with his hands. He could do things like that. And then he started to dig a well. Well, there was no water. It went very deep. No water. So obviously this was not going to be good farmland, and so he had to take a job in the little town of Republic, which is still a little town, and where he worked as a blacksmith. And after 3 years there, that's where my mother started school. And after 3 years there, my grandma says, this is no place to raise Jewish children. And so they came to Seattle about 1909. So my parents, yeah. Yeah, and then my father came, and then when World War I broke out, he volunteered to serve in the U.S. Army. So at that time, that gave him, I guess they asked him if he wanted to change his name from Abramovich to something easier, and so he chose the name Abram, so that's how we became Abrams.
Now, what year did he come over from Lithuania, approximately, do you know?
I think 1916, I think that was about the time. And then he met my mother in Seattle. I can't remember how they met, but they did meet. And then he, as I say, volunteered for the Army, and he was sent to France, so he was there. And when the war was over, and thank God he survived, he came back here to Seattle. And of course, he had relatives. Well, he had this older brother who was married and had several children. His brother had told him, you better get a trade when you come to America because there are too many Jewish scholars here.
Is that right?
Yes. His older brother became a sheikhed here and did that. That was his work until he retired. So my father... My husband will get it, I'm sorry. So my father was able to get work as a tailor. Although, well, that's right, when he first came, he did what many Jewish people did when they first came. And, I mean, these were poor people. Yes. So he would collect things. I guess kind of a junker?
Peddler,
yeah. And I guess he had a horse and wagon. And at that time, his older brother had moved to Bellingham. I can't, you know, it was slowly moved down. So I think, they were originally in Bellingham, moved to Mount Vernon. Okay, and so he was a peddler there. And then I'm not sure in what order he got to Seattle, but then he was able to get a job as a tailor. So eventually, and I don't remember how many years he worked for other people, but eventually my mother said, well, why don't you, you know, go into business for yourself? And so, which he did. He had a little store on First Avenue near Seneca, and that's the store I remember, and he had that until after he died. My mother sold the store.
I see. What was the name of the store?
As I recall, it was United Tailors. Oh, gosh, I can't remember. Isn't that funny? Because I actually worked in the store when I was about 13. I'd go down there after school because he needed somebody to be there so that to prevent shoplifting. Because it actually was, there were two sides to it, and he needed somebody on one side where they carried mainly shirts and socks, and I can't remember if there was underwear, but anyway. So that was the side I had to work. And I was able to do my schoolwork because things were not busy. By that time, of course, we were into the Depression, so there wasn't much business. And yeah, United Tailors, and there was something else, but I don't know why I can't remember.
Okay. Let's see. Did you consider your parents role models?
Actually, I had a deep admiration for my father. I was amazed at... he was really self-taught when... virtually to learn English. and he learned to write well, and he was really, with his experience serving in World War I, he became quite a pacifist and a believer in, I don't know if he called it world government at that time, but that war is totally wrong. And he wrote a very impassioned article, which was printed in one of our local newspapers. And I think either my brother has a copy, or we have a cousin that's is the daughter of his older brother, who has just been great about keeping the family records, so she may have it. But he was very caring, very sensitive person, and very, I thought, very bright. So I had a real deep admiration for him. The other role model, mainly for me, was my grandmother. I admired her. Well, the things that come up. So she also was very caring and would help anybody who needed help. And, you know, they didn't have much money, but she was always willing to help. And she did take in boarders, not that one I remember, but when they first came to Seattle. So that would have been about 1909. And, in order to help with the family income, because I think the only work grandfather could, his first job was sweeping the streets in Seattle. So, and then later he began to use his kind of machinist and skills. She was very well organized. I never saw her ruffled. She handled things well. She was very active in the Workman's Circle. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's still in existence, and I think there's even still a chapter, but it did kind of fold here for quite a while.
Could you describe what you know about that and her role in that?
Well, it was quite an organization that really helped a lot of Jews, I think, assimilate. Maybe that's not the right word. But anyway, I think adjust to, because they weren't ready to assimilate. It was their grandchildren that did the assimilations. Adjust. And she was very outspoken what they believed in. And in my understanding later, that it was kind of a socialistic organization. I don't know that that was the big factor, but they were people that were really concerned about the lives of others. And I know my grandfather, he apparently wasn't active in the organization, because I don't remember, maybe he was too busy with his work, didn't have time, I just don't know. But I know my grandfather just felt there was no country greater than the United States. And of course it's true when the background that they came from, I mean, my goodness. And of course we do. This is a great country. But anyway, so, you know, I don't really know too much, but I know that my grandmother was very outspoken what was right and what was wrong. She, I admired that she, you know, had this strong sense of justice, and was a very caring person, and I also had learned that when she was still in Russia as a child, that she had earned money by knitting, so she could go to pay for classes. So she was, you know, unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to get a real good education, but at least she was knowledgeable about Russian and in Hebrew, and so I just had tremendous respect and admiration for my grandmother, and she was wonderful to me, and I loved going to her place, and when I got older, I could help with things, she grew vegetables. I guess Grandpa helped in that. They grew vegetables and berries, and they had chickens.
That's something.
Yeah, so it was fun.
Now, where did they live, close to your home? Or?
Yeah, they were, well, I can remember the addresses, 22nd East Terrace. And it was like a half a block from Garfield High School. And we were always within just a radius, close, really close.
Walking distance.
Oh, yeah, very close.
And so while you were growing up, you were able to witness her work for this organization?
Well, I'd hear about it more and know that she always gave, and that people had problems, they could come, she would listen.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it started way back, this listening. Anyway, yeah, so don't know a whole lot, but I remember hearing some of the stories that, and she was always ready to help out.
And this is while she was raising a family in later years.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I wonder how common that was for women at the time. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, I know that there were women, the Jewish women that worked, but I think most of them, well, I know a couple of cases, they were, the women were friends of my mother's, where the husband walked out on them, and so they had to work, and they did, and they raised their children, and they did a good job. So I wouldn't say, well, of course, in those days, it was hard because you washed clothes by hand, you had to boil water, you had to, I mean, it was hard. So, you know, it was, and with my grandmother, she took in boarders, so she was home and was cooking, and so she was able to do those things. So I really don't know how many, actually worked. But my grandmother also worked in Russia. I mean, they came from a shtetl, and she had a little store. So I don't know whether, you know, I never got it straight, but I'm sure that sort of like a general store, small things that people might need. But it was a hard life because, you know, running water and going to the river to get the water, it was tough. And so she did have somebody help in the home, because my mother talked about the girl that, sort of took care of her and my Uncle Jack. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sure that many, if it wasn't outside of the home, it certainly was within the home.
Yes, sounds very much so. And what about your mother now? Did she also work for the same organization that your grandmother worked
not
for?
Not to the extent as my grandmother.
I see.
But I know she used to go to the meetings. And
is that right?
Yeah. And but I don't remember. But later, she did do a lot of volunteer work. But it was, I remember she volunteered at the Veterans Hospital, and this was after my father died. And so she did quite a bit of volunteer work, and she also worked, she worked at Frederick Nelson, the children's department, and so she also did what she could.
Yes. What was your relationship like with your siblings?
Well, my older brother, in the early years, according to my mother, resented me because she was supposed to have a boy. And he just had no use for me. He was a very independent little kid, although he was only three. And he didn't spend much time at home, but he was not... So that was, kind of a strange relationship. Although, when he got older, it was changing. He became more intelligent.
He grew up.
Yeah. With my younger brother, I just thought he was the most beautiful baby in the world when my mother came home from the hospital. I was only three. I just thought he was so adorable. And so we got along very well. In fact, we're still very close. Unfortunately, my older brother died when he was 66. So that happened. It was an aneurysm. He was visiting here, and he was spending his winters in Hawaii. He and his wife had a condo there. And he came back for some business reasons. And we all got together. I remember it was my younger brother's 60th birthday. And I do remember Dave saying that he had this headache, but he was going to go to the doctor the next day. And he did. But the doctor just said, well, you need to rest or something. Well, it turned out to be an aneurysm. I mean, that he went home. He was supposed to have dinner with some friends, Jewish friends who were also neighbors. And when Dave didn't show up, his friend Irving came to see what was happening, and also fortunately had a key to the house, because in case there was anything happened while Dave and Bernice were gone, that he'd be able to help. And found my brother on the floor. He was not dead at the time, but he was, I guess, in a coma, and they had him on life supports. And then his wife came in, and there just was no chance. And so that was a really so sad, because my mother, of course, was still living at that time. And I remember at my brother's 60th birthday, the night before, I said, oh, isn't this wonderful? My mother has all these senior children now. And here we are. I never dreamed that the older brother, that would happen. So, but my relationship with my younger brother, Dave was gone a lot, and so we never really had a chance to develop a real friendship. Mm-hmm. Cared about each other, but with my younger brother, we have a real close relationship, so, which is good.
And he lives in Seattle? Or?
Yeah, he lives on Mercer Island. His okay. name is Sid. And he and his wife, Marika, we get along wonderfully, and it's a good relationship.
Let's see. As you were growing up, what were your parents' expectations regarding education and marriage and work, those kinds of things? What values do you remember?
Well, I don't know whether it came from them, but anyway, strong that you marry a Jew. You stay in the faith. And there was no preaching, but the value came across. And so that was no problem. And as far as education, I don't know where it came from, but I always felt I wanted to get a college education. And this older cousin that I mentioned, who's got keeping the family records, she was actually one of my role models. She's in her 90s now, and still bright and alert. She lives in San Francisco.
What is her name?
Her name is Mary Blumberg. Do you know her or heard about her? Yeah. Yeah. So she. So Mary had gone to the University of Washington, had gotten a degree in social work. In those days, I don't know that, I think you could do it with a bachelor's degree. And I just thought the world of Mary. She was just, I thought, the best. And she is. She still is. Everybody loves her. So I know it came from that. And so, yeah, she was had a real strong, I don't think she knows that. I'll have to tell her. But I, you know, I always thought of Mary. So yeah, so that the idea of going to college was, I absorbed that. And my mother's younger brother went to the University of Washington. And so it just seemed like, well, that's the thing you do, you know. And I loved school, so learning was just, I just loved it.
So let's see, as a young child, where did you go to grade school?
It was Horace Mann. Okay. It's now closed. Uh-huh. But it was no kindergarten in those days. It was the first grade through eighth grade. I remember my first grade teacher, who I did not admire, she absolutely terrified me. And to me, I always think of her as an eagle. Just, anyway.
Oh, tell us about her, actually.
Well, it's hard to say how old she was, because at that age, anybody would seem old. And I don't know what it was about her, but I did learn to read, and I did go into the second grade. And actually, the teachers from then on, especially my second grade teacher, we did, you know, they did 1A the first semester, 1B the second semester, so I entered in 1B. The next year, I must have finished off then the 1A part with another teacher. She was very young, I remember that, and just bubbly and really nice. And I was very shy, but she would have me do little errands for her, and of course that made me feel very important. And so she did a lot to help me, you know, sort of come out of my little shell. And so always deeply grateful to her. And so that was a good experience. And then the next teacher, who I think was Miss Dayton, but anyway, that's where we started working on math. And I really loved arithmetic, and I did extremely well there. And then from then on, you know, the teachers were good, and they were, you know, I did well. And one year I was held back. The doctor, or a visiting nurse, I don't know, or a public health nurse, I guess it was. I had a rash and a fever, and so I don't know how my mother, how he got this service, but a public health came to the house and said, oh, you know, I had scarlet fever. And so the rest of the family had to move in with my grandparents. And so my mother was with me, and he was supposed to keep the room dark. And, you know, after a while, I didn't feel sick. I think the rash went away. I just don't know. But I was out of school a month before they would let me go back to school. And so I really am not sure that I had scarlet fever. But during that month, let's see, what grade was I in then? I must have been in the eighth grade, and the eighth grade apparently was too large, and so they moved some of the students up to the higher level. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I just felt horrible because I wasn't there, because I knew I was one of the best students, and that if I'd been there, and the teacher said so. But she said, we didn't know when you were coming back, and we had to do this. And so I presented a case for myself.
Is that right? What did you do?
I said, well, I don't think it's fair, you know, that just because I was sick, that I don't have this opportunity. And the other part was that it would allow me to graduate in June instead of the middle of the year. And I did want that. And so I guess I was persuasive, because she did say, well, you'll have to go talk to another teacher, Miss Libby, and because that's the class you'll go into. And she says, you know, I feel very badly about this, but so I did it. So I went, presented, and I did it in a very positive way, you know, saying that I was supposed to be in this class. And I was assertive, which, you know, was something I, first time I'd ever been assertive, but I didn't know the word. I just knew that this is what I want. I'm not going to let it myself be cheated out of that. So the teacher was annoyed because, you know, that manager fitting me in there. And so she says, well, we're going to have, I'm giving the reading test. If you pass at a high enough score, then you can stay, but otherwise you go back. So, unfortunately, I did very well, so I was able to stay. So I always felt very good about, you know, hey, you know, you can speak for yourself, and if you feel something's right. So I thought that was a good lesson.
Isn't that something? Did your parents play a role in this, or was
No, I did it myself.
On your own.
I never asked my parents to be involved, and they just always assumed, you know, I would do the right thing.
Now, and you were, this was in eighth grade, so you must have been about 13, 14, something?
No, because I thought I moved when I was in, maybe I wasn't 11 when we moved. Probably was, well, let's see, I was born, that would, probably 12 to close to 13. Hmm. Yeah, because I think we moved then, after eighth grade, so I was actually older. I'm sure I was 12, and that my next birthday would have been 13. Yeah.
Was that typical for girls at that age to be able to speak up to their teachers or to question decisions?
Well, I don't really know. I was never aware of anyone else doing anything like this.
None of your friends were doing that.
No.
So, what steps led you to do that?
Well, first of all, I was just, I'm going to use the word enraged, but I don't think I think it's thinking back. But I was very upset that I'd been first kept in the bed, you know, in a dark room, and because I knew, I was positive that I was not, I didn't have scarlet fever. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, we didn't have money, so you couldn't do things that one could do, if you had money, you know, have another doctor come in or whatever. And also I didn't, you know, I was just saying, but I was especially angry when I found out that, you know, I can't remember how many students were moved into this upper level, meaning they will graduate in June, which is something I wanted so badly. And I knew that I was one of the top students in the class. And I had never thought about it before, but I knew at that time. And the teacher did say, well, you would have been, you know, one of the choices. And but you weren't, we didn't know when you were coming back. And see, we did have a telephone, my mother was not involved in this, and I don't even know if I talked to her about it.
So on your own.
Yeah. Well, I think at an early age, I learned that if things were going to happen, I had to do it.
And the sense of social justice and injustice
Was strong.
Was strong in you.
Right.
Do you know how that developed in you?
Well, I really felt that I must have absorbed it from my grandmother. And now I didn't really get to know my father because he was working late hours and many days, and until after I started working in his store. And so then I had a chance to talk to him and ask him things. And so it certainly came there. But I must have been, and I don't know that it was from, the only religion school education I had was a Sunday school. And one summer I did go to the Talmud Torah to learn Hebrew, and I did very well. I learned to read and write, and unfortunately I didn't stay with it. But I don't know, because later, you know, when I learned more about Judaism, you know, it definitely asserts that sense of justice is extremely important. And so I'm not sure.
But
I felt, you know, that was something.
That's one of the incidents, beginning incidents that
right.
you remember.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Isn't that something? And you've, we're getting off track a little bit, but just to continue this line, that you've gone on to spend a great deal of your life working to improve the quality of life for people, and in
That's
areas
true.
That seem where there is social injustice.
Right. Yeah.
In both your paid work and volunteer work.
Yes.
So, would you like to talk about that now, or should we, talk about that later? You can tell me.
If you want me to talk about it now, I can.
Okay. And then we'll come back to your more about your childhood.
Okay.
let's see. Give me a second here to just move forward. Okay. I'm not exactly sure where to start. Maybe you can help me with that. But one thing that comes to my mind is that you decided that you wanted to get a major in sociology, mm-hmm. and you attended classes at the University of Washington in 1942. Is that right?
Well, I did, but for only one quarter. By that time, I was going with the man who became my husband, and there, it would have been 41, 42, that first quarter, the quarter I think ends in January, I think, but maybe not, but anyway, it was started September 41, and so I went one quarter. I actually was I was disappointed because I was still working at my father's store, and then I was seeing my husband, the man who became my husband. He was working as an engineer at Boeing's, and so he would come over every night, and I felt that, since my older brother had worked in the store and then decided he wanted to do other things. I mean, this was while he was going to high school. That I was hoping that I could really have time to work on studies. I did okay. It certainly was no problem with what I did. But it was feeling pressured by all the various things I had to do. And so I decided, and since it turned out my husband owed a lot of money for while he was getting himself through the University of Denver, and he wasn't paying his bills. So actually, I took over managing his money.
You were good at math.
Yes. And I had a firm belief in you pay your bills and you try to save money. And so I thought, well, I better just, get more work and just work full-time and save money for when we get married. And we got married the following June of 1942. But that was a disappointment that I didn't stay at the university. But always in the back of my mind, that was something I wanted to do. But as far as social justice, yes. I'd say one of the first incidents that really struck me, made me so angry, was when I graduated from Garfield High School, and they had a senior party, and I didn't know how it was organized or what, but it was at a country club, north end of the lake, can't remember, but anyway, when I got there, that was before I met my husband. I was with another senior, another graduating senior. And And I looked around, and there were no people of color there. And we had, as far as I recall, it was all white. And there were, we had a large number of African Americans at that time, we call them black, and Asian students.
Excuse me, what year was this?
Graduation was June of 1941. It was before the war started. And so that just made me very angry. And I wondered, you know, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And of course, I already knew that Jews were excluded from Broadmoor and the Highlands and, you know, certain other very wealthy areas. And there was discrimination. There were quotas for Jews to get into the big name colleges and the Ivy League schools. So I was, certainly was aware of prejudice, but this to me was just too much. So that made me very angry. I didn't know what to do about that. And certainly I had friends among all the people there.
Excuse me, just taking a step back and talking
sure.
a bit,
uh-huh.
Because it seems like such an important story. When you were in high school, mm-hmm. What were the interactions like between whites
and the other
color,
well,
or non-white?
You know, I do think that there was more interaction with Asians.
I see.
And
is it Japanese, Chinese?
It was more Japanese that I recall. There were some Chinese. There were Chinese there also, but it's the Japanese Americans that I mainly remember, and who were in, you know, many of the same classes, not in huge numbers, but they were there. They were definitely mm-hmm. there, and I know. I certainly was friends with, I don't know, it seems there was one girl that now I can't remember the name, but, you know, somebody who I did admire and thought was very nice. I do think the African Americans they stayed to themselves, which is what I've heard even happens where the schools are integrated, but each goes off to their own group. But probably not, well, I don't know. Say, but anyway, so, but they were in the classes, and there was one student that I remember from the Horseman Elementary who had been apparently had to repeat classes over and over again, and that to the point where he was in the graduating class that I was in at the elementary school, and just before, I think in his last semester, he was hit by a car when he was coming back after lunch and was coming back to school. And so he was out for quite a while, and thank God they did let him graduate. He did fine at Garfield. He went through in 4 years. He was an outstanding musician, and a lot of us knew him and really thought very highly of him. So... But there wasn't that much interaction. But at the graduation, I knew, where are they? So, yeah. So I knew students, but there wasn't that much, you know, social interaction.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it was just, it was infuriating to see
yeah.
this.
That to me was just beyond belief, and I was really angry. But again, I didn't know how to direct it. Who do you ask? What do you do? And then there were other things, you know, I was working and getting ready to go to, you know, the university, and so that's right. And I didn't. I met my husband that summer, of actually July 4th of 1941. It's when we met, and so nothing happened there, you know.
And at the university, for when you went, that's, you know, that fall.
That one quarter, yeah.
Yes. What was it like, the social climate like there for...
You know, well, I remember, I didn't mix that much because I was working after school, and I mean, you know, after classes. But I remember at lunchtime that I was able to get together with other Jewish students because they had, where we could eat lunch together. This was before Hillel. I don't remember how it was publicized, how we knew or what, but that we would generally eat lunch together. And that was about the extent of it. Wait, Hillel did come along. Yeah. But yes, Hillel had been started. But I didn't go to it. Well, I went to it, yeah. But I just can't remember.
Yeah. And were there many blacks or Asian students that mixed at that time with the rest of the student body? Or?
You know, I can't remember in the classes. I remember I would take the bus to a bus, streetcar, whatever we had. I think it was streetcars in those days, to get to the university. And I had to change, I guess, streetcars at 23rd and East Madison. And there was a black young woman who also went to the university. And so we would visit while waiting for our streetcar, and we got to talking about, you know, the jobs that we also held, and she was doing house cleaning. Well, you know, see, I would have never thought of doing house cleaning even in the Depression, but I was always able to get work. Well, of course, there was my father's place, but I also had managed to get a job at a, I guess what we called a 10-cent store one Christmas holiday, so I had that experience. And then in my senior year at high school, I was able to get a job at the Bon Marché when there were lines of people applying, and I was able to, I couldn't believe that I was hired. You're all these, you know, older people. And I always, at that age, I looked very young. But also I lied about my age and said I was at the University of Washington. Because I didn't want to be, I wanted to get a job. And so what I did was emphasize the experience that I'd had working for my father, cashiering, bookkeeping, and that I, you know, and I accepted the responsibility. I was there on time. Yes, it was my father, but I handled it just as I would any employer. Anyway, I got the job. So, and then I also did babysitting. You know, so worked in the high school in the locker room for the girls. You know, handing up, taking their clothes, putting away, giving them towels. So I had a bunch of little jobs. But then when I thought, oh, yeah, she doesn't have the opportunities that I have. And so that made quite an impression, too, on me. And then, of course, when World War II broke out, and hearing the proclamation, I guess it was the president, that all the Japanese Americans had to go to camps. I was really outraged.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, there was a Japanese American family that had a grocery store close to where we live. And of course, they had to close. And I knew their, I think they had a son that was about my age, and knew him. And I had gotten to know several Japanese Americans that, and I admired them, you know, for they were good students, the ones that I got to know. And then there were also some, it was a restaurant across the street from where my father's business was. It was a Japanese, I'll say Japanese American because I assume, you know, at least their children were. So that business had to go. And, you know, there were others, and knowing what happened to the international area at that time, I think we call it Chinatown, but, you know, that it just cleaned out all those people, where there was no evidence that they were ever involved in any... my husband will get it. No evidence, you know, that they were involved in any kind of activities that were dangerous to the country. So that was another experience that just, you know, I felt was so wrong and really hurt. Again, you know, what do you do? And so that hurt. And, but, yeah. Those were some of the experiences. Well, of course, what was happening to Jewish people. And then what was worse? Oh, I remember one experience that I had when I was still living above my grandparents. I was playing with one of a black girl about my age. And then she said, well, let's, you know, go to my house. And so I went into the kitchen, and her mother just became just terrified, but scolded her daughter. She says, what are you doing? You know, I can't remember the words, but you had no right to bring her in. Well, somehow I had already absorbed that there was discrimination against blacks. And somehow I knew something about, you know, slavery. I must have known something. And I felt so sorry. And even though we didn't have much in their house, what they had were used, you could tell, were kind of broken down things. And I felt terrible. I was sad about what I saw there. And knowing, I mean, I assumed... You know, it's kind of hard to believe that I could have acknowledged, but it left quite an effect on me. That this is horrible. You know, that people are discriminated the way they are. I probably didn't know the word, but they're treated that way, and so that had quite an effect on me. So never had a chance to play with her again because her mother was frightened, and you know, from what I know today, that her daughter could have gotten in trouble, or she could have had something horrible happen. So I could understand it was that her background, and I'm sure she had a very limited education, the mother, and it was pretty sad. So I could see these kind of things that were happening, and that it really did bother me. And yeah.
So what did you do? How did it, you know, this progress? Yeah,
well, the other thing that, the things that I know had an impact on me, seeing how people interacted, the problems within families, that something could be done to make life better, and that it seemed wrong that people didn't have the opportunities that the white people had. And so I guess that led me to sociology, to have a better understanding of, you know, what creates this, what can we do. I remember becoming aware of prostitution when I was working at my father's store. I'd see these women walking up and down the street, and then occasionally with a man. And it was quite a while before I realized what they did. And at that time, I thought, well, yeah, I was became interested in socialism at when I was in high school. I thought the things were wrong because of the depression and how people were, you know, having such a difficult time. And so I thought, oh, well, if we had a better society, a more just society, with economic justice also, that women wouldn't have to do things like that. Well, I learned differently. During the war, when there were plenty of jobs, women were still walking the streets. So I learned a little bit about that, too. So, you know, there's... Anyway, I felt there's a lot to learn.
What were there discussions at home about your observations? And what?
No, you know, I just didn't talk to my parents or to my brothers. Uh-huh. Well, Dave was always gone. Sid was, you know, much younger. And my mother always seemed to be very busy with whatever, and my father had come home late and tired. Mm-hmm. And I suppose later when I was working in the store that I probably did talk about these things with my father. So, but it was mostly kept to myself.
Did you have a group of friends that shared your...
No, not really. I really didn't even discuss these with friends.
So this was really a private experience over time for you.
Yeah,
group,
yeah.
See.
Right.
Huh. And let's see. At this point, should we jump to, let's see, you went back to college later on.
Right.
But you started working first for the state, is that right?
Well, after I got my college degree, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, let's see. So maybe we should take a step back then.
Okay.
And bear with me here as we jump
in. Sure. That's okay.
Okay. Let's see. I wondered if there's anything else that you wanted to share about your high school experience, any classes that seemed most enjoyable or formative, any teachers that were role models or...
Well, I guess, I loved math, algebra and geometry. I loved French, and I had a wonderful teacher for French. I had some, I know one English teacher stands out. Names. I can still see her. She was very stately, and she was wonderful. And let's see. I guess, you know, and then there were some teachers that I thought, oh, goodness, you know, quite a disappointment. But, I loved learning, so, you know, the fact that they were boring didn't mean that subject matter was boring. So, it certainly did have a positive effect. But there was no one really that, you know, it would have been nice to have had a counselor that, or somebody that I could have talked to. And there might have been some such person at the school, but I didn't know about it. And so, I figured, well, I'm going to go on to college and, you know. And I thought I'd, you know, be a social worker, but, you know, I wasn't sure. But I loved math so much I even thought, you know, maybe I'll do accounting. I don't know. But then I later thought, no, I like working with people, and I wouldn't want to just strictly work with numbers. I'm certainly glad I didn't choose that. So I still like numbers, and I still like... I did have friends there, and I belonged to, I guess they called it Junior Hadassah, so we had that social group, and so it was, you know, and there were dances and, you know, AZA and Jewish groups, and so that was, so it wasn't a totally work or school only, but, you know, there was time for some social life.
And some extracurricular.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, I remember used to turn out for after-school sports. Never good, but loved to be physically active.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I still am in that, you know, I swim, but I'm a plodding swimmer. But I do it. And anyway, so I do enjoy, you know, being physically active.
That's great. Let's see. So you met your husband, Art?
Yes.
The summer before you started at the university?
Yes, yeah.
Let's see. Could you tell us a little bit about your courtship and marriage? And
okay. I had been invited to a beach party, and Art was also, Art and his roommate, the two had driven across from Denver to Seattle to both go to work as engineers at Boeing. They were invited to this party. They knew a relative of someone who's said, why don't you come to the beach party that we're having tonight? It was July 4th. And it's at Alki Beach. And so they came there. And once Art saw me, I mean, I'm trying to remember, did I go home with my date or did I go home with Art? I don't remember. I think I went home with my date. But Art found out where I lived. I suppose he asked. And was there to see me the next day. And he was just there. And then proposed to me, I guess it was that following October. Gave me an engagement ring. And so we then planned the wedding would be in June. My mother had a fit. I mean, obviously, I was still 17 at that time. 18, following January. So she was just sick about it. But she didn't have the way to talk to me. Go ahead. Do you want to say?
Just a moment.
Sure.
I think what we're going to do is stop this tape. I think this tape has finished.
Okay.
And what we'll do is we'll pick up with a second tape.
Okay.
So hold your thought. Okay. Okay.